Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, December 9th, 2021. Marfa, downtown and Judd properties considered for National Register of Historic Places by Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa, a long-running plan to create a historic district in the center of Marfa for the National Register of Historic Places is moving one step closer to being realized. On Thursday, December 16th, business owners, Marfa residents, and those curious to know more about the process are invited to attend a meeting with the Texas Historical Commission, THC. The public information meeting, held next Thursday, December 16th at the Presidio County Courthouse, at 5:30 p.m., we'll discuss the nomination process, the boundaries of the Central Marfa Historic District, and how it impacts property owners within the district. The proposed district centers around Highland Avenue south of the courthouse, but its boundaries are roughly defined by Washington Street to the north, Dallas Street to the south, Dean and Russell to the east, and Austin and Abbott Streets to the west. It's an irregular boundary, Greg Smith, a federal programs coordinator at THC, explained. We draw them to include the highest concentration of contributing properties. One of the tricky things here is that we're focusing on the commercial district, and in Marfa, there's not a 100% clear distinction between commercial and residential. Contributing properties are usually ones that fall within a 50-year period of significance and have retained a good degree of integrity. In this case, we're extending that period into the 1990s, with the second period just to account for Donald Judd, his work, and his influence, Smith said. The effort to recognize a historic central district in Marfa began as far back as the mid-2000s, when the city of Marfa began looking into being on the register. With discussions underway, Judd Foundation was interested in having many of Judd's properties in town recognized on the register, having a historic research survey carried out that identified resources and priorities for the district. Since Judd's properties are scattered throughout town, Smith said the project was reframed to include both the Judd properties and a broader scope of Marfa as a whole. We already know that this area is eligible for listing, just as Marfa's Main Street, so my recommendation was, why not include them, the Judd properties, in a larger district? That way we could kill two birds with one stone. The proposed district up for consideration covers Marfa's downtown strip, as well as reaching to incorporate many Judd properties. The Judd Foundation and Chinati Foundation have supported the project through much of the process, saying in a joint statement that they are proud to support the Texas Historical Commission's efforts to nominate the Central Marfa Historic District to the National Register of Historic Places. Initiated by the City of Marfa in 2006, the nomination of the Central Marfa Historic District ensures the preservation of our city's rich history. Our organization supported the research and development of the nomination as related to Donald Judd and our spaces, building on the current historic designations for Fort D.A. Russell, which includes much of Chinati Foundation, as well as Judd's home and studio, The Block, the statement continued. In recent years, preliminary information has been sent to a reviewer at the National Parks Service, which maintains the National Register of Historic Places. He wasn't familiar with Marfa or Donald Judd, Smith said. What we're doing here is sort of ambitious when it comes to the National Register. Not that we're nominating a district, but that we're nominating it in part for its national significance because of its connection to an artist. If successful, it could open up more opportunities for expanding the scope of the National Register. Marfa's Fort D.A. Russell, which is already on the National Register, might also be revisited sometime in the future. When it was added over 15 years ago, Judd's work at the site was too recent to be widely considered as historical. Fort D.A. Russell was listed more or less despite Judd, so now, especially once this one goes through, it will be primed to go back and look at D.A. Russell and start evaluating it for its military history, but also for its association with Judd, Smith said. While listing a property in the National Register of Historic Places indicates that a place is a historic property worthy of preservation, it is an honorific title and doesn't mean there are any binding rules put on any of the properties that fall within its boundaries. We have these meetings to be clear that everybody understands that, first and foremost, listing in the National Register will have no adverse impact on anyone's private property rights, Smith said. The idea is to retain the historic appearance of buildings, structures, and landscapes, but the National Register does not carry any restrictions, nor does it require property owners to do anything with their properties, Smith said, even noting they could be demolished. The idea is to have them recognized so at least some consideration can be made to the historic significance of these properties, so hopefully good decisions can be made with consideration to these properties. Still, should a majority of the private property owners within the district object to the nomination, the district won't be listed on the register. Instead of restrictions, a place on the register opens up additional opportunities for properties that are inside the district. One of the major benefits of being on the National Historic Register is federal and state tax credits for rehabilitation, said Smith. Anybody who owns a building within the district who wants to use it for a commercial purpose, they can qualify for federal and state tax credits when they rehabilitate the building, as long as it meets the rehabilitation standards. It also applies to nonprofits. That's an especially important point for the Central Marfa Historic District, which was designed to incorporate properties owned by Judd Foundation, the nonprofit art institution. However, if the district is approved, private property owners will also be able to apply for grant opportunities that have so far been out of reach. Federal and state tax credit details can be found at www.thc.texas.gov/tax credits. The State Board of Review will meet early next year on January 15th to consider a variety of applications, including the one for Marfa's Historic District. A full copy of the draft nomination will be available on http://www.thc.texas.gov/sbrmeeting ahead of the meeting. Map courtesy of the Texas Historical Commission. A map of the proposed Central Marfa Historic District, which may be placed on the National Register of Historic Places. Rare earth mining project at Round Top near Sierra Blanca could have significant implications for entire Big Bend region. Photo courtesy of the Office of Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts. In late October, Texas Comptroller Glenn Hagar Wright visited with USA Rare Earths senior geologist Tim Palmer left about plans for the company's Round Top Rare Earth Mining Project near Sierra Blanca in Hudspeth County. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Far West Texas. Round Top Mountain, located about 8 miles northwest of the town of Sierra Blanca in Hudspeth County, could be the site of one of the few rare earth mining operations in the United States as early as 2023. Rare earth minerals are primarily mined in China and are used to make magnets which power everything from electronics like cell phones and computers to large-scale rechargeable batteries like the ones used in electric vehicles, wind turbines, and military weapons. Battery-grade lithium, gallium, zirconium, hafnium, and beryllium are among the valuable minerals present at Round Top that will be mined. Of the 17 rare earth minerals, 16 have been found at the Round Top site, as well as other high-value tech minerals. Contrary to the name, rare earth elements, or REEs, are metallic elements that exist in abundance in Earth's crust. However, at Round Top Mountain, REEs have been found in higher concentrations, which makes it more economically viable to extract the minerals, and why the site was chosen for development of a rare earth mineral mine by company USA Rare Earth. According to recent mapping projects by the U.S. Geological Survey, parts of El Paso, Hudspeth, Culberson, Jeff Davis, Presidio, and Brewster counties contain significant levels of rare earth deposits. The rare earth mining process is known to produce radioactive and toxic waste byproducts, raising health and environmental concerns around what a project of this scale could mean for the Big Bend region. REEs have been found in at least 19 states, and a number of other mining projects are underway in Texas and other states. Proponents of the mine say it will bring increased employment to the area and royalties collected from the General Land Office, GLO, which is leasing land and mineral rights to USA Rare Earth, would funnel into the public education system, therefore benefiting the entire state. The Round Top project is expected to be a boon for the local and state economy, yielding 130 to 195 direct full-time permanent jobs in Texas and adding about $26 million each year to the state's public education system, said a press release from Texas Comptroller Glenn Hagar's office. In the recent past, there has been a significant push from the U.S. government to start the production of American-made magnets to alleviate U.S. dependence on these resources from China and meet growing demands from the auto and renewable energy industries. In an effort to secure the supply chain and kickstart domestic operations, President Donald Trump signed Executive Order 13817 in December 2017, which directed the Department of Commerce to offer strategies on a number of rare earth-related issues, including lowering dependence, investing in recycling, and improving permitting and mapping processes. The Coronavirus Economic Relief Bill, which passed at the end of 2020, also invested $800 million in domestic rare earth mining and processing. The Biden administration has also supported these goals by prioritizing strengthening U.S. supply chains. Rare earths provide essential components for everything from electric vehicles to wind turbines to everyday electronics. USA Rare Earth was created to deliver these materials in a way that bolsters Texas' clean energy industry and environment and that fortifies our national security and West Texas economy, said Thayer Smith, president of USA Rare Earth. But the town of Sierra Blanca has a history of power struggles with the state, having hosted a New York City sludge dump for years and staving off government-backed attempts to create a radioactive waste dump site in the area. Bill Addington, a ranch and farm owner in Sierra Blanca, a co-founder of Sierra Blanca Legal Defense Fund, Incorporated, and an environmental activist who helped stop a radioactive waste dump site from being built in the area in the 1990s, opposes the Round Top project. Addington worked at a beryllium mine in Sierra Blanca in the 1980s and is concerned how the rare earth mine could affect the health of the community, he said. It's something for the region to be concerned about, not just Sierra Blanca. It has the potential to contaminate a wide area through the wind. It sets a precedent for more of this stuff to come into our region, said Addington. An attack on any part of the Big Bend is an attack on all of the Big Bend. The preliminary designs of the mine consist of an open pit mine, multiple heap leaching pits, and a plant on site. The proximity of the town of Sierra Blanca to the mine is of concern, said Addington. The population of Sierra Blanca is 764, according to the Census Bureau's 2019 estimate. Addington was not aware of any outreach efforts from USA Rare Earth to the community to date. Once again, Sierra Blanca is an environmental justice case, and we'll be claiming environmental racism because we're too poor and there's not enough of us to fight back, said Addington. No one's coming to talk to us, nobody in this town, and we're the closest community. USA Rare Earth owns an 80% equity interest in the Round Top Mountain deposit, with Texas Mineral Resources Corporation owning the remaining 20%. It has been announced in previous press releases the company could begin mining as early as 2023. The project is expected to yield more than 300,000 tons of rare earth oxides and meet 17% of projected U.S. demand for rare earth minerals with $140 million in annual sales, according to USA Rare Earth. The mining operation has been in the works for years, but has reportedly gained traction over the past few months, completing baseline environmental studies and the first phase of its stormwater management plan, among other findings. USA Rare Earth is jump-starting the rare earths industry and providing a vital supply of materials for a range of fast-growing Texas manufacturers, including employers in the electric vehicle, defense, and electronic sectors. Their project here will add to our state's business-friendly climate, which includes low taxes, low regulation, and low-cost electricity, by ensuring that vital materials can reach Texas manufacturers more efficiently and reliably, said Texas Comptroller for Public Accounts Glenn Hagar after a visit to the Round Top site in October. The GLO has leased a total of 950 acres to Texas Mineral Resource Corporation in two 19-year mining lease agreements. Within those 950 acres, the operation owns all rights to surface and subsurface resources. TMRC also purchased surface rights on an additional 55,000 acres of land around the mining lease from the GLO for other facilities, including leach pits and an on-site plant. TMRC has acquired an additional 1,300 acres of land from private landowners in the area. The site benefits from railroad access from previous development, when the site was a New York City sludge dump owned by Merco Joint Venture in the 1990s. TMRC is in the process of developing a plan to acquire more private landowners' surface rights that may be required for the development of the project, and believes it is a reasonable expectation that it will be able to acquire such surface rights prior to the completion of a feasibility study. The company's preliminary economic assessment, PEA, document states, in exchange for leasing the land, the GLO will receive a 6.25% royalty on the market value of all minerals. The exact percentage is subject to change. Those royalties make up the $26 million a year toward Texas public education, a number produced by USA Rare Earth. While the final design of the mine and accompanying facilities has yet to be publicized, an initial map in the PEA document shows the site for the proposed open-pit mine will be on the very tip of Round Top Mountain, essentially excavating into the mountain from the top down and leveling it. The initial 20-year pit was designed to keep all the mining to the northwest portion of Round Top Mountain. It was decided to mine this area first due to the highest drilling density in this area and in order to minimize the visual impact of the mining from the interstate. Additionally, all the crushing and leaching facilities will be located north of Round Top, so this will minimize haul distances early in the life of the mine, said the PEA report. In an effort to align with green initiatives, the Round Top operations will be fully powered by an on-site solar plant, and more than 80% of the site's revenue will be from materials used in clean, green applications, USA Rare Earths said in a statement. The Texas Comptroller's site also alluded to the use of a proprietary process to reduce the environmental impacts at Round Top, although it is not clear what that process is at this time. USA Rare Earth also owns a rare earth processing facility in Colorado and a neodymium magnet plant in North Carolina. We believe the Round Top project will jumpstart the domestic rare earths industry and support a range of fast-growing Texas manufacturers. We also believe it will strengthen and catalyze Texas' base in clean energy and electric vehicles. We plan to power our operations with minimal greenhouse gas emissions and to extract minerals in a safe, environmentally sensitive way, using a contained closed-loop process with minimal infrastructure requirements, said Smith, president of USA Rare Earth, in a statement. In order for the site to be fully operational, a number of permits from the Texas Center for Environmental Quality will need to be obtained. In a preliminary economic assessment released in 2019 by USA Rare Earth, it states a total of 12 permits will likely need to be acquired. Among the number of air, water, waste, and operations permits is a radioactive material license, hazardous waste, explosives, water rights, and petroleum storage permits. To date, the only permit that TCEQ has granted the project is a construction stormwater general permit, which, in addition to the new source review permit to construct, must be obtained before beginning construction. The act of mining and processing rare earths is complex and costly, with significant environmental impacts. In China, which mines over 70% of the world's rare earth mining has taken a toll on mine workers and the environment. More relaxed laws have led to devastating pollution and dangerous levels of exposure for mine workers who have suffered from health complications. In addition to air quality concerns, Addington, as an area landowner, said he would like to know more about the potential effects on surface and groundwater and whether or not the Regional Water Planning Group has discussed the impacts of the developing rare earth mine. Randy Barker, manager of the Hudspeth County Underground Water Conservation District No. 1, said he was not informed about the rare earth mineral mine at this time. Having fought similar efforts in the past, Addington raised questions about whether or not he could continue to even live in the area if the mine comes to fruition. I'm third generation. I've got deep roots here. My grandfather's sweat and blood is in this land. It would be very hard for me. It would be like pulling up a tree from its roots. It would damage me to do that, but I'll leave, said Addington. Addington scrutinized whether or not the state of Texas will continue to allocate state-owned land for ventures similar to the Round Top Rare Earth Mine, with little input from the local citizens. Austin doesn't care about us. They consider us somewhere to be used as a dumping ground. West Texas better wake up to that because it's not going to stop here. It's going to Marfa, Fort Davis, and Alpine, said Addington. Hudspeth County has been like a feeding frenzy over here for years, and we're sick of it. Wen Song, assistant professor in the Petroleum and Geosystem Engineering Department at the University of Texas at Austin, focuses her research on the recovery of resources and, recently, rare earth minerals. Song says while the U.S. may have stricter environmental laws than some other countries, because these operations are so new, ensuring the REE mines are not doing more harm than good will be an undertaking. A big part of the reason why the U.S. hasn't had rare earth recovery and processing is because it's a very environmentally stressful process, said Song. That's why, over the last 20 to 30 years, it's really been dominated by China. One really important challenge is, how do we do this in a way that's environmentally benign? Song said from an engineering perspective, it will be interesting to see how the rare earth minerals will be extracted from the rock they are embedded in. Understanding the specific types of rocks, the ways rare earths are bound to them, and what the right chemistry is for removing them are key questions going forward, Song said. Song points out that the rare earths are hosted in rhyolite at Round Top, which is a porous rock. The qualities of the rock, like hardness level or connectivity of holes, determines extraction methods and difficulty level, said Song. The porous nature of the rhyolite is beneficial for heap leaching, allowing for a higher surface area to volume ratio, she says. That allows fluids to potentially flow through, so when we want to extract these minerals, a lot of the time we'll use acids and things like that, so obviously those are fluids. So that's good in terms of being able to actually access the minerals that host the rare earths, Song said. Most recently, USA Rare Earth reports leach testing of the surface samples confirmed a rare earth recovery of 85% or more. USA Rare Earth is now primarily focusing on a preliminary feasibility study, and it will continue to explore additional financing with its advisors, Goldman Sachs and Bank of Montreal. The Big Bend Sentinel will continue to follow the Round Top Rare Earth Mineral Mine Project as updates occur. A map of U.S. rare earth deposits under study by the U.S. Geological Survey's Earth Mapping Resource Initiative project shows parts of Presidio, Brewster, Jeff Davis, Culberson, Hudspeth, and El Paso counties contain higher concentrations of rare earth deposits. Imaged by the USGS Earth Mapping Resource Initiative. Big Bend Big Fix low-cost spay and neuter clinic returns to Presidio County by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County, the Big Bend Big Fix, a low-cost spay and neuter clinic sponsored by the Far West Texas Rescue Coalition, is returning to the region next weekend for Presidio County pet owners seeking veterinary care at reduced rates. Their services include spay and neuter surgeries, vaccines, and microchips. The program began in February and was an instant success. They started small with a pop-up clinic out of the Marfa Animal Shelter and expanded to programs in Marathon, Fort Davis, and Fort Stockton, serving anywhere from 50 to 100 animals a day. "It was incredible to us," said Janine Bishop, executive director of the Alpine Humane Society. "It saves our shelters a lot of money, and it gets a lot of animals done." Bishop explained that there are many barriers to pet owners looking to spay or neuter their pets in the Big Bend. Vet care at traditional clinics can be expensive. Local practitioners can charge anywhere from $130 to $350 for the procedure. Female dogs are priced on the more expensive end of the spectrum because spaying is a more invasive surgery. For lower-income residents in the Big Bend, these costs can be prohibitive. "We felt there was a need to go into markets where people don't have a lot of money," said Nina Dietzel, a Marfa-based artist and dog lover who has supported these clinics since their inception. "Those barriers can also be cultural. It's not a real common thing along the border for folks to spay and neuter their pets," Bishop explained. "It's been a big education and outreach project." For male animals, neutering can prevent behavioral issues like roaming and spraying household belongings. Spayed female animals tend to get fewer infections in their reproductive system. There's this mistaken belief that a female pet should have a litter before they're spayed, Bishop explained. "That's just not true. Spaying and neutering is really important for all pets. There's so many unwanted animals and so little shelter space, and we all try really hard to be no-kill." This time around, the Far West Texas Rescue Coalition is partnering with Animal Balance, an organization that got their start serving pets in the Galapagos Islands. According to their website, Animal Balance volunteers are very used to working in remote settings with few resources, often in another culture. "I've done dog rescue since I first landed in the States," Dietzel said. "In a small community like Marfa, I think a lot of people find something that they feel fits a need. I just kind of felt like personally I could foster and foster and foster, but the only thing that truly moves the needle out here in West Texas is to spay and neuter, to make those litters of puppies not even appear in the first place." The next Big Bend Big Fix will be held in Presidio on Saturday, December 11th, and in Marfa on Sunday, December 12th. The cost is $85 per cat or dog and includes a rabies vaccine. For an additional cost, microchips and vaccines against parvo and distemper are also available. The organization can offer limited financial assistance and transportation options to those who qualify. For more information or to schedule an appointment, call 432-837-2532.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, December 9th, 2021. FSISD, Texas Tech, K-12 Form Partnership. By Nathan Hewer. An unprecedented partnership between the Fort Stockton Independent School District and the Texas Tech University K-12 Pro online academic program became official on December 1st at the district's special board meeting. The Fort Stockton ISD School Board unanimously approved the partnership, which is scheduled to begin next semester. The partnership is the first of its kind in the state of Texas, according to the TTU K-12 Interim Superintendent, Dr. Justin Lauder. TTU K-12 has worked with the public in different ways. This is the first time that we've done a formalized partnership with a school district where the teachers will work with our staff and work with our curriculum, but with their students. It is the first partnership of what we hope will be a model for additional partnerships that we can do with other school districts around the state. We really think this is a very innovative for Fort Stockton and what they put together. Lauder explained that TTU K-12 is the only K-12 provider offered by a system of higher education in Texas. There are currently 11,000 to 12,000 part-time students and 2,500 full-time students taking courses with TTU K-12, an award-winning online academic program developed by the state of Texas in 1993. For Fort Stockton ISD, TTU will initially be utilized to accelerate the learning of students and provide an exemplary remote learning option for those who qualify. The Fort Stockton ISD is currently working on gathering data from simulated tests and assessments to determine students that would be appropriate fit for the asynchronous learning program. Student test results fall into four categories, according to the state: failing, approaches, meets, masters. The district will use the same model to categorize students and make recommendations accordingly. If the kid fails and the data shows they are failing, they're a very good candidate and one that I would most likely have a conversation with their parents to see if this is something we can use to accelerate them, said Gabriel Zamora. According to the most recent testing data provided last year, the largest grouping of students within the district are in the approaches category. The hope of one of the main reasons of behind TTU K-12 partnership is to elevate students' abilities and test scores across the board. I want to get all the kids to meet the meets grade level, and it'd be fantastic to get them to master's. One of the preliminary steps to put the partnership in motion is the selection process of teachers. The district is currently gauging interest of Fort Stockton ISD teachers who are willing to teach courses for the TTU K-12. Once selected, teachers will be trained by the staff. Teachers will receive an additional $2,300 in compensation by the university for becoming a teacher with TTU K-12. The district will give additional stipend compensation to teachers depending on how many students they teach for the program in a school year. In the future, Zamora said at Wednesday's meeting that the district will open availability to students at other districts if there are spots available. The program is leaving it to us to be the ones that select kids to enroll, and we have an agreement that states we can assist other districts as well. We're going to look at serving our kids first, and then if there are remaining seats, we're going to open it up to other districts. We can contract with them to pay us the fee that we are going to charge them. That money is not applicable when it comes to being recaptured by the state. That's a different revenue source, so that's the best of both worlds for everybody. Veterans Outreach and Engagement held in city by Nathan Heuer. Veterans in Pecos County received an opportunity for aid that hadn't been presented before in the area's history this past week. The Veterans Outreach and Engagement event was held at the large community hall at Rooney Park on December 6th. Congressman of the Texas 23, Tony Gonzalez, put the event into motion after receiving feedback from veterans in the community he has visited within the district since taking office. In West Texas, we have a shortage of veteran service officers, so the congressman said we need to help these veterans because he would hear about the issues in his travels around the district. He's a veteran himself, and he really wanted to help those in his district. Schultz contacted the Texas Veterans Commission and Veterans Affairs to set up an event where veterans could attend and receive the aid they need in all areas of assistance available. Mike Jager, Texas Veterans Commission Southwest District Manager, said that the array of services available to veterans as the event was the first time all entities had come together in his 19 years with the commission. "I've been with Texas Veterans Commission 19 years. It's the largest event we've done in West Texas. We've done one in Alpine that didn't have all the TVC subparts in it. Just the claims. That was 5 or 6 years ago. All subpart of the Texas Veterans Commission, claims, mental health, justice-involved veterans, health care advocacy, education, women's veterans, employment, rural county advocates, communication, funds for veterans assistance were on hand to aid veterans at the event." Jager said towards the event's conclusion that approximately 150 veterans received aid at the event. Pecos County Memorial Hospital names new CNO by Megan Weary. Hope is a word that is heard often, but for Rachel Rodriguez, it's a way of life. As a 1991 graduate of Fort Stockton High School, Rodriguez's pride and joy has always been with her community. She hopes to continue that connection in her new position at the Pecos County Memorial Hospital as Chief Nursing Officer. Watching her own family develop into healthcare heroes stimulated a drive in Rodriguez to do the same. Her great-grandmother was a midwife, her mother was a certified nursing assistant her whole life, and her younger sister Veronica is a registered nurse, and they've been working together for over 20 years. "My mom has been the person that has always been there for me," Rodriguez said. "She has a passion, and she instilled that in all of us. To have a passion to love and to care for others, you just can't buy it anywhere. It's something that is a God-given gift. I'm honored that God has given that to us. I strive to do the right thing every day." Experiencing the heartbreak from her other sister, Juanita, who passed away at the young age of 20 from asthma, and the countless hospital visits also developed Rodriguez into a stronger person. She additionally credited other healthcare professionals that taught her something along the way. "Dr. Cecil George has been my mentor through my nursing career. We work together through hospice. If at any time that I needed guidance or encouragement, he's been the man that I would call. He would guide me or steer me in the right direction. I needed to go. He's been a big role model for me." Before making the transition into her new job, Rodriguez worked in hospice care for 24 years. Hospice focuses on the quality of life for people and their caregivers who are experiencing an advanced life-limiting illness. According to the American Cancer Society, "My best memory is walking into a patient's home in hospice," Rodriguez said. "A family will tell you, you're an angel, and you're such a blessing. They have no idea that they've blessed my life by allowing me to come in and help. It's those little things that are so important, and knowing that I made a difference. It's the most rewarding thing I've ever done. Being a CNO is more than just being a leader. But most of all, it's important to encourage and show compassion to the entire hospital family. My goal is for them to realize how beautiful they are from the inside. They have so much to give, especially because a lot of us are from this area. We have so much knowledge. If I can encourage them to be better and make their dreams a reality for whatever it is, then let me do it. It takes a village to maintain an uplifting and patient-centered environment, especially during the troubling times of COVID. We cannot do this alone. Life is too short, especially during COVID, and trying to survive it. It has been sad. It has kind of brought us a lot of our staff down. To see the sadness in a lot of the families and knowing that a lot of our staff are grieving in that process, but to know that there is hope, and we see the light at the end of the tunnel, is something to look forward to. Toy Drive to Bring Cheer to Children by Megan Waring. A local church is working to give away 500 toys to children before Christmas. I know it's just a toy, but a toy to a child who maybe wasn't going to get one this season is a big deal to us, People's Church pastor Victor Lopez said. People Church, formerly known as Grace Point Church, is hosting a toy drive located at 108 West 10th for the entire community to participate in on Sunday, December 19th. Residents can donate new toys every Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 4 up until December 15th. Giving a toy, no matter how big or small, to a child this Christmas can go a long way. We want to believe and definitely pray that maybe that toy brings hope to a child and even a parent. Hope is just acting in a way different than our circumstances. We want these children and even their families to not only have hope, but begin to act towards it, knowing that God has a plan and a purpose for their lives. Lopez hopes that by the church and community giving this year could ultimately help future generations do the same. That's why we give, he said, because we're crazy enough to believe that loving people well could change families for generations. People Church is not the only organization in Fort Stockton that will be hosting a toy drive this year. Donation boxes have been popping up all over town by the Fort Stockton Rotary Club for people to contribute toys to children in need.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, December 2nd. Town of Thorntonville to get a park. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. For the first time ever, the town of Thorntonville will soon have a city park. The city purchased the almost 2-acre lot during the last budget cycle for $80,000. According to City Secretary Jo Lynn Siebenar, quote, "This area has been a problem in town for a while, and in an ongoing effort by the city to clean up Thorntonville, it was decided to purchase the land and build a city park." Ward County Commissioner Eddie Nelms and his crew were busy Tuesday morning cleaning up the lot, which is located at 2202 West 4th Street. Nelms said, quote, "We will have the land cleared by the end of the week. Then good dirt will be brought in, which has been donated, and another company will take all of the old tires. The city, Thorntonville, has budgeted a good amount of money, and the county will provide the labor. It will be a nice place for residents and eliminates a problem area. I've been wanting to do this for almost 20 years." End quote. The park, which is slated to be completed by December 2022, will have covered picnic tables and a play structure and is budgeted for around $150,000. Quote, "We want to have a place for our residents to go for get-togethers and to have a safe place for the kids to play," Siebenar said. Weeks gets 25 years for stabbing a man to death in 2019. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man was sentenced to 25 years in prison on November 23rd for his role in the 2019 death of Detravion Trammell Fields, age 23. 26-year-old Tanner Joseph Weeks of 205 South Ora Street pleaded guilty to murder and waived his right to a jury trial. Fields was killed in a stabbing incident after an altercation with Weeks and an additional suspect, Joseph Delane Locke, age 41, of 204 South Calvin Street, on December 12, 2019, at a home located at 512 West 12th Street. At the time, Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana said, quote, "Weeks, Locke, and Fields got into a physical altercation outside of Fields' residence at 512 West 12th Street. Officers learned that two white males left the residence in a vehicle after Fields was stabbed one time in the abdomen area," end quote. Officers were able to identify the suspect's vehicle, which was later located in the 2100 block of West 2nd Street around noon the same day. Through the course of the investigation, Weeks and Locke were both named as primary suspects and arrest warrants were issued. Both were later subsequently arrested without further incident and charged with murder. Fields was transported to Ward Memorial Hospital and later died from his injuries. In conjunction with the search for the suspects at the house on 2nd Street, a large amount of methamphetamine was located at the residence, which led to the apprehension of 7 other individuals who were all present in the home at the time. Locke has yet to stand trial and remains in custody at the Ward County Jail in lieu of posting the $1 million bond. Weeks was further ordered to pay $378 in court costs and was given credit for 710 days time served. Trustees start redistricting process. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Meeting in special session on Monday night, the trustees of the Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD voted to begin the process of potential redistricting of the district's 7 trustee boundaries. The possible redistricting is mandated by potential population changes as the result of the 2020 census. The trustees adopted a resolution to begin a plan that should be drawn in such a manner that the maximum deviation from an ideal size, as determined by dividing the population of the district by the number of single-member districts, 7, that compose the district's school board of trustees by not more than plus or minus 5% for any individual single-member district, or total top-to-bottom deviation between the most populated district and the least populated district by no more than a maximum deviation of 10%. The resolution is the first step in the redistricting process, with the next step to hire a firm to conduct a population study based on the criteria noted above. Trustees present for the abbreviated meeting were Bobby Almanza, Raymond Reyes, Joel Greiner, Nancy Upchurch, and Steve Fine. Trustees Quint Melius and Donna Garcia were not present. A special meeting will be held at 6 p.m. on December 13th to hold a public hearing to review preliminary redistricting data and attorneys from Allison and Bass, who specialize in the redistricting process. The regular session will begin at 6:30 p.m. Both meetings will be held in the School Administration Building at 606 South Betty Street. Barstow man charged with sexual assault and indecency of a child. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Barstow man was arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail last week on a felony aggravated sexual assault and indecency of a child charge against 2 children under age 17 whom he was a legal guardian. Jesus Angel Quiroz, age 38, of Barstow, was picked up on 2 felony warrants on November 23rd. According to Ward County Sheriff Freran Valle, quote, on October 11th, around 11 a.m., deputies responded to the city park in Barstow in reference to a child custody issue. While taking the report, the complainant, who was another legal guardian of the children, spoke to deputies about possible sexual abuse of a female child under the age of 17. Quiroz was named as a suspect in the sexual assault at that time. As per protocol, Child Protective Services was notified and, along with Harmony Home and Medical Center Hospital, who all assisted in the investigation, evidence of sexual assault from the female victim was obtained. Quote, deputies later learned of another female child under the age of 17 who the complainant said was also possibly a victim of indecency by sexual contact, Valle said. Quiroz was once again named as the suspect. Further investigation showed enough probable cause existed on both complaints to apply for arrest warrants for Quiroz. Warrants were issued on November 19th charging Quiroz with aggravated sexual assault of a child and indecency with a child sexual contact, both second-degree felonies. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of 2 to 20 years in prison, a fine of up to $10,000, or both. Quiros was released from custody after posting the $65,000 bond. Man accused of shooting girlfriend in shoulder indicted. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man accused of pistol whipping and shooting his then-girlfriend in the shoulder this past summer has been indicted by a Ward County grand jury. The indictment was handed down on November 12th by the 143rd Judicial District and stems from a June 11th incident which occurred at 12:15 p.m. at a trailer home located at 705 South Eva Street. The accused, Cody Blake Newbern, age 28, of Monahans, was indicted on one charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. At the time of the incident, Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana said, quote, "Dispatch received a call in reference to a female who was shot. Once officers arrived at the scene and announced themselves and asked the male suspect, later identified as Newbern, to exit the residence, he was not armed at the time," end quote. The 40-year-old victim, Jennifer Malone, was on the floor of the residence suffering from a gunshot wound to the left shoulder and a wound to the side of her head. Malone was conscious and speaking to EMS personnel with her 16-year-old son by her side, who was also in the residence at the time of the shooting. Quote, "A physical altercation between Newbern and Malone occurred and a small caliber gun, a .22 caliber Ruger revolver, was discharged and struck Malone in the left shoulder. She also had a wound to her head," Quintana added. Malone was transported to Ward Memorial Hospital and soon after life flighted out to a bigger area hospital. Newbern's bond was set at $25,000 and he later posted bond and was released. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 2 years or more than 20 years, and a fine not to exceed $10,000.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.